So we're jumping into a new sermon series today, and in that, we're going to look at the journey to Jerusalem, Jesus' journey to Jerusalem. Now, what typically happens before Easter is we hear a couple sermons. We hear Palm Sunday and the triumphal entry. We might hear the Last Supper sermon. We might cover some of those key texts that are in the last week before the crucifixion that we call Holy Week, if you've been in the church, if you've grown up in the church. But in that, we miss some really cool things that Jesus did. We miss some incredible encounters with Jesus that happened in this two-week time frame, in addition to those couple of things. And since you guys, well, I'm going to assume you would all love to be so holy that you came to church every single day of the week for the next 14 days, but I couldn't write that many sermons, so I'll save you. thanks, Earl. But I want to pick through some texts that we don't familiarize ourselves with as much, because I think there's some real gold in them that Jesus has for us. So are you guys ready for that?
Amen. Yes.
All right. So a couple of us. Thank you. Yeah. And if you are visiting, we appreciate feedback here. All myself, all our ministry students, Pastor Rick, we all appreciate some back and forth. So we're good there. So I want to lead us up to where we're going to be in our text today, which is Luke chapter 19. And at this point, Jesus has been in ministry for about 3 years. It's before he heads into Jerusalem. It's his last stop, actually, before he heads into Jerusalem on what we refer to as Palm Sunday for the triumphal entry. And so he's had about three and a half years of healing people, casting out demons, multiplying a little boy's lunch on two different occasions to feed the multitudes. He has shown authority over the weather, the elements. He's shown authority over spiritual forces. He has done all of that, right? And in that, he is making this last stop in Jericho. And Jericho is a wealthy, affluent city. It's just a little ways from Jerusalem, not a whole day's journey. And in that, Jerusalem is like an oasis. Matter of fact, when Pastor Rick and I went to Israel, oh gosh, it's been 5 years now almost. When we went to Israel 5 years ago, we were actually on the Jordan side of things at first. And you look across from the mount where God took Moses to look out over the promised land before Moses died and the nation of Israel went in. And you can see all the cities because it's just desert, right? Like, so you'll see this brown landscape and then you'll see dots of cities or dots of green. And we looked out from there, and you could see Jericho. Like, they have a helpful little map that points the arrows to the cities like a dial on a clock. But we could see in the midst of all of the desolation, this green, lush, well, to us it was like a thumbprint, right, because it was over yonder, but this lush green oasis in the middle of desert land. And to this day, that's Jericho. And so I want us to understand that Jesus wasn't heading into a little city. He wasn't heading into a town. Jericho was a thriving, affluent, wealthy city, as wealthy as any city could be under Roman rule. And so that's kind of where we pick up today. And so are you guys ready to read with me? Because, y'all, I know we're a little tired from yesterday. I'm a little tired, too, so I need some energy to help me. Good reading voices? Are we at least thumbs up? Okay, I got two woohoos. Awesome. Online family, I hope you've got your coffee and you're ready. Let's go ahead and read Luke chapter 19, verses 1 to 4. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. Okay, So I did not grow up in church. I don't actually know all the words to the song, but some of you who grew up in church right now are going, Zacchaeus was a wee little man and wee little man was he, and that's something blah, 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 and a sycamore tree. That's all I got because I didn't grow up in church. But there's so much more to this text. Even these short four verses, there's so much more here. If we're going to be real, if we're going to keep it real, if we're going to encounter Jesus the way Zacchaeus encountered Jesus, then there are some things for us to understand about the context. And so here in the 21st century, we get these four verses. And one of my jobs, one of our teaching team's jobs as pastors is to fill in the blanks, because it's like you guys have the highlight reel from the movie script with none of the descriptions or the staging or any of that. And I really want to invite you to enter in today, because when you enter in, what Jesus has for you will be so much more significant than a wee little man who climbed up a tree. So with that invitation, I want to take a look at this text and say, what do we need to know about Zacchaeus? Because we see a few details. He was a man. He was a chief tax collector. He was Jewish. And he was wealthy. He was short. So let's talk about a few of those things. To be a Jewish man in the first century was not just a nationality. Like, we talk about that. It wasn't just like being an American, right? To be Jewish defined everything about him. It was his ethnicity. It was his religion. It was his race. It was his nationality. It was his context for existing. Because to be Jewish defined what you ate, how you ate, how you washed your hands, when you washed your hands, what festivals you celebrated, what festivals you didn't celebrate. It defined everything in your life as clean or unclean. It defined everything about him. And yet, we also find out he was a tax collector. And we think, we talk about this sometimes, but the tradition is to read this and think IRS. And okay, none of us really like the IRS. It's tax time. Y'all are like, Pastor Jen, why are you preaching about little tax man in April? That's not funny. Sorry. But it's really not so bad for us, see. Keeping it real, that's right. To be a tax collector in the first century, to be a Jewish tax collector in Jericho, meant that you were a traitor to your own people. Because the whole region was under Roman rule, and they had to pay taxes to Caesar. The Jewish people had to pay taxes to Caesar, and as the chief tax collector, he was in charge of all the tax collectors in the city, and then their job was to collect money from an oppressive government, like a foreign dictator, say, I don't know, Canada conquers us and takes over, and we got to now not just pay for our own United States, but we got to pay for Canada too. That's kind of what this is like, except the Romans were hated and despised. And we see that Zacchaeus was wealthy. Do you think the Romans paid the Jews well for doing their job? No, they didn't. What Zacchaeus being wealthy meant is that Zacchaeus was skimming off the top. So it's not enough that I'm going to go up to Annie to collect taxes from Annie that she owes Rome, but I'm going to be like, Annie, I need a new chariot. I'm going to take some extra from you, and if you don't give it to me, I'm going to have you thrown in jail. You guys liking the wee little man? He's not so cute now, is he? Boo, right? Boo hiss. I actually have that in my notes later on. Boo hiss. Yeah, we don't like Zacchaeus now. We also see that not only was he a chief tax collector and not only was he wealthy, he was short. He was Danny DeVito short. All right, that's old. He was Kevin Hart short. Okay? He's a short guy. He can't see over the crowds. The crowds don't want to be anywhere near Zacchaeus anyway. I assure you, everybody knows who he is. For one, he's wealthy, and there aren't many wealthy people. But for two, his face is on all the wanted posters that people throw darts at on their walls at home behind closed doors. I can guarantee it. And so he isn't nobody wants to be around him, but even if they wanted to be around him, or even if his wealth bought him entrance, he couldn't see a thing because he's so short. But it says he wanted to see Jesus. Why? Why would this guy, that guy, the one who's betraying all the other Jews, why would that guy want to see Jesus? Change of heart. Maybe because he heard Jesus heals. Maybe because he heard Jesus breaks all the rules. Because I don't think Zacchaeus' experience with the church has been so great up to now. And he hears Jesus breaks the rules. Jesus touches lepers, and Jesus touches dead people, and Jesus touches things that are supposed to be unclean, but they never seem to make Jesus unclean. As a matter of fact, whenever Jesus touches something or someone that's unclean, suddenly it's clean. He walks on the Sabbath. He heals people on the Sabbath. Can you imagine the devastation? He brings life on God's day. Huh. There's rumors that he's the Messiah, this Jesus. There's a lot of rumors at this point because we're 3 years in. Maybe Zacchaeus heard that one of the rabbi's students was actually a former tax collector. What do you think about that? But still, y'all, if we're keeping it real, Zacchaeus is still a bad dude. Like, he is still selfish, oppressive, a thief, a dictator, all the things he would need to be. He's got to have some muscle to be this wealthy and take extra. He's got to have some muscle behind him because he's a little man, but he's got to pay some muscle to have some muscle, right? Think of it like this. He is the community leader that embezzles and steals money from the orphans and the widows. That's where I had boo hiss. Boo. Hiss. Okay. All right. So if you're Zach, why in the world would you want to come and see Jesus? Now maybe it's because the religious leaders seem to hate Jesus even more than they hate tax collectors. That's a fair thought. But maybe it's because Zacchaeus keeps hearing that Jesus brings hope to the hopeless. And if we're taking an honest look at Zacchaeus' life, he might be rich, but he's lonely and he's miserable. And I'd venture to say he's a little hopeless. So that's kind of where we're at. Can you guys picture it? Now, we also learn a level of Zacchaeus' desperation, because you might be thinking, Pastor Jen, you just took a whole lot out of he wanted to see Jesus. But see, there's some desperation involved here, because what we may not understand without knowing the context and the culture is that when it says that he ran ahead and he climbed a tree, that demonstrates just how desperate he was to see Jesus, because the men in those days had robes that went to the ground, and the richer you were, the heavier your robes. You can't run in, ladies, can we run in an evening gown with hiking up our dress and showing our legs a little bit? No, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. He ran, which means he very inappropriately had to hike up his robes, tuck them up on his arm to be able to run. And yet he did. And not only did he do that, it says he climbed a tree. That sounds like fun. I won't call you out by name, but I can look at least six people in this room who would be like, I'll climb a tree, let's go. That sounds like fun, let's go. In first century Jewish culture, children, servants, and slaves climb trees. Because you climb trees to pick fruit. You climb trees to do work. Self-respecting people, adults, didn't climb trees. They had somebody do it for them, especially rich, wealthy adults. So not only is Zacchaeus so desperate to see Jesus that he's willing to hike up his robes and expose his legs, which is scandalous, but he's willing to take the position of a servant and a slave to get up in the tree and risk that somebody would see that. I want to teach you something. When you see little details, in like that, like why would that be there? Like he climbed a sycamore fig tree. Things that make you go, pay attention. Like why would Luke put that in there? Why would that detail be important? Because a sycamore tree has really low branches, which is helpful if you're a really short guy, right? But it also has lush, full leaves. It's a very full tree. It isn't sparse. So if he's climbing a sycamore fig tree, see, if he's climbing an olive tree, everybody sees him. But if he's climbing a sycamore fig tree, he's hidden. He's concealed. He's behind all the leaves and all the foliage and all the things. It's a good tree for climbing because the branches are short, but it's an even better tree if you want to see but don't want to be seen. Am I the only one that's ever come in to church wanting to see but not be seen? You sneak into the back row. Oh, I was 5 months pregnant, sneaking into the back row. Oh, sorry. If you're visiting, we keep it real. Pastor Rick and I have been blessed and happily married for 26 years, but I had a whole life before that. So I was unwed, 5 months pregnant, sneaking into the back row, desperate to see but not be seen. Now, maybe you're not sitting on the back row. People in this room, the introverts all sit in the back row because they're behind the lights and I can't see them when they're in the back row and they know it. They're not hiding. But today, we just mask up. And I don't mean makeup. Today, we just put on our face. We put on that face that says, I'm fine. I'm good. I got nothing to hide. How are you? How are you? Someone asks how you are, and you're like, I'm great. How are you? And you are falling apart on the inside.
Watch my toes.
I'm sorry for whoever's toes I'm stepping on. So before we go any further in this narrative, I have to ask us to take a minute and stop and think. Who are you in the story? Where are you in this story? Are you the disciples walking beside Jesus? Are you in the crowds? Are you the fan cheering Jesus on, coming to see what it's all about? Or are you the thief in the tree? Because I don't know about you or where you're at, but I know I've been in all three places. And if you're going to get what God's got for you today, then you have to ask yourself, where are you? Are we okay, church? Ooh, all right. Well, maybe scripture will make it better. Actually, I'm going to read to you. We're going to start verses 5 and 6. It says, when Jesus reached the spot. Now, I know I gave you a lot of detail. So remember, Zach ran ahead, climbed up the tree. He's well hidden. He's cloaked. He's disguised. The crowds come because he ran ahead of the crowds. The crowds come because Jesus is coming. And it says, when Jesus reached that spot, he looked up to him and he said, Zacchaeus, come down immediately.
Busted.
Exactly. Can you imagine, like, the crowd is coming. There's throngs of people lining the streets. Jericho's a huge city. Throngs of people lining the streets, waiting to see Jesus. Jesus comes. The disciples are there. The crowds are there. The whole gang is there because they're getting ready to go into Jerusalem, right? So he's got his whole team. He's got his whole tribe plus all the fans. And he's walking along, and Zacchaeus is here in a tree, and he's walking along, and everybody's talking, and he goes, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. Busted is right. You ever been somewhere you're not supposed to be? You ever been a teenager sneaking out, and you're at a... this never happened to me. Thank you, Jesus, very much. You sneak out and go to a party, and it's a really cool party with all the cool kids. I'm sure you never did it. You've just seen it in the movies. And the parents find out, and the parents walk into the room full of all the cool people and point at you and call your name. That has to be how Zach feels right about now. Busted. You said it earlier, Charles. Busted. Now, what do you think the crowds think right about now? I mean, Jesus has been turning over tables. Jesus has been righting wrongs. Jesus has been calling out people that are doing the wrong thing. Like, Jesus has been calling out the people who have been robbing people. Bless you. But what do you think the people thought? Ooh, that's what I'm thinking. If I'm there, if we don't know this story, if we don't know scripture, if we've never encountered any of this, there's pomp and circumstance, and Jesus looks up at the jerk who's been stealing from the orphans and the widows and says, come down immediately. Now, I read that in my nice little church voice, and Jesus very well may have used a very nice voice. But he also used a command form and said immediately, and any parent or child in the room knows that that means business. Teachers too. He says, come down immediately. And then as the crowd waits, like I visualize these things. Y'all know I'm weird, right? I want to see it. I want to live it. And I just picture the crowd leaning in like, get him, Jesus. Get him. Get him. Like, get him. Let's see what Jesus says. Can we put up that next slide? I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Say what? What just happened? Anybody else? Like, plot twist. Jesus has come down immediately and he says, I must stay. That Greek word is katelio. It means I must find lodging at your house. He didn't just invite himself for supper. He invited himself to stay the night. Jesus said, me and my tribe, my posse, my whatever, we're Zacchaeus, I see you. Get down here because I have to come and stay with you. Now, again, Jesus isn't being rude. What you want to understand about first century culture is that there aren't hotels and motels. Like, when someone of honor came into town, the biggest honor someone could have was hosting them in their house. People had upper rooms in their house just for guests who came by. People that you didn't have to be family. You didn't have to be a friend. You could be a total stranger and knock on someone's door and request lodging. That was how it worked back then. But for the rabbi, who might be the Messiah, who could stay anywhere he wanted to stay. It's like he could stay at the White House and he chose to stay at 23 Potomac Avenue over here. That's our house, by the way. It's just a little ranch. Jesus said, I need to stay. I must stay with you today. What do you think the crowd did? What? Does he know who he is? Does he know where he's been? How could he? But see, the crowd saw Zacchaeus' treachery. And Jesus saw Zacchaeus' brokenness. And he had compassion. Now the passage goes on and it says, so he came down at once. Let's go ahead and read verse 7. All the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. All right, actually want to back it up. That was my fault. It says in the text, so he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. At once. Zacchaeus came down with speed and purpose. Zacchaeus, who wanted to see but not be seen, gets called out by Jesus to come down, and it says he came down at once. He came down with intentionality and on purpose. D.L. Moody said Zacchaeus' life was transformed in the 7 seconds from the branch to the ground. Do you need transformation? Is there somewhere you need help? Because we want to make this coming to Jesus this really big deal. We think we got to get cleaned up first. We think we got to get it together first. We have this misnomer that we have to do all these things. I got to clean myself up before I go to Jesus. Jesus looks at us and says, Jen Legacy, get out of that tree right now. Because I see you, and I love you, and I have compassion for you. The beauty of this is that it's not just for Zacchaeus, and it's not just for me. We all have hidden sins. We all have secret things. We all have the things we don't want anybody else to know, and we come in and we act like everything is okay. Are we okay, church? We act like everything is okay. And when we act like everything is okay, we think nobody knows what's happening. And we forget that God knows everything and he sees everything. And he's not mad at you and he doesn't want to shame you. He doesn't call you out of the tree with the parent tone. He calls you out of the tree. Zacchaeus, come down here. I want to stay with you. I want to dwell with you. I want to remain with you. I want to be in community with you. Despite all your stuff, Jesus says. The irony is that it does never cost us anything to come to Jesus, but it cost Jesus everything. Got a little ahead of myself and already had us read verse 7. But we see all the people saw this and began to mutter, he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. That Jesus, he's gone to be with him. How were the crowds treating him before this? Not Zacchaeus. How were the crowds treating Jesus before this? Woohoo, like a king. They're following him. They're running ahead of him. The crowds are gathering. They're lining the streets. It's like some famous person was coming to Indian Head and they all lined 210 to see what was happening and to cheer him on. Like if the Redskins would have come down here this year. I'm sorry, the Commanders would have come down here this year. We'd all wanted to cheer him on. But now they're judging Jesus. Now they're like, oh, he's hanging out with that guy. Because the decision for Jesus to love Zacchaeus and the decision for Jesus to love us cost Jesus everything. And I think it's important we remember as we go into places and spaces, as God calls you into different spots in your life, sometimes it's going to be really uncomfortable. Sometimes it's not going to be peachy keen. Sometimes it's not going to be a happy day in the park where people are cheerful and grateful. Sometimes loving unlovable people, which is what God will sometimes call us to do, is really uncomfortable. And we end up being the people that get judged for it. And that is when we must be the hands and feet of Jesus and not worry about what other people think. Because I don't know about y'all, but I have been the unlovable person that needed somebody with enough courage to step up and say, I want to come stay with you. Are we okay? See, despite our hiding, Jesus sees us. Despite your hiding and my hiding, Jesus sees you and Jesus sees me. And despite our sin, Jesus seeks us. And I think that's what we need to hear sometimes. Despite our mess, despite our sin, despite our disobedience, despite our addictions, despite our problems, despite our flaws and failures, Jesus seeks us to love us and to be in community with us. And if you have felt like you need Jesus, but you're afraid that he may judge you, like you want to talk to him about that thing, but you're ashamed, he already knows that thing, and he's standing in front of you with open hands and open arms anyway, desiring to love you and restore you in a way that transforms you. Are we good? Amen. All right, let's together read verses 8 and 9. Is that where we're at? Yes, let's together read verses 8 and 9. Let's see how this goes. Now, some time has passed, okay? We don't get that, but there's an indicator in the text. Some time has passed between the tree and going to Zacchaeus' house for dinner and the celebration that is currently taking place. All right, so go ahead and read with me. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times that amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham." Okay. So there's a dinner party. They're there because he stood up from the table. There's only a table at dinner. And stood up is a big deal because the tables weren't our height then. They were down here. You reclined at the table, laid on the floor with your arm on a pillow at the table to eat. That's how that worked. So good news, as short as Zacchaeus is, everybody else is down at the table. So it doesn't matter. He still has command of the room, right? And you better bet that even though the crowds were grumbling, the crowds came. Like, they wanted to see what was going to happen. Plus, the guy who's been ripping him off is having a big dinner party, and that's worth taking, right? Like, oh, nobody else is going to be real? The richest man in the town throws a party, and you know the food's going to be really good, and you can show up, and you're not going to show up just because the food's going to be good, and you want to watch the show? No, none of y'all watch reality TV. Good, I'm glad you shouldn't. It's terrible. Okay, so time has passed. Despite the dislike, the crowds have followed. There's an extravagant dinner party, and Zacchaeus makes this bold statement. "I'll give half of my wealth away, and I'll pay back four times everything I owe." And I want you to understand, he's not lying intentionally. Like, here's what you need to know about Middle Eastern culture. And to this day in Middle Eastern culture, it's a culture where the more sincerely you feel something, the more exaggerated your statement becomes. And so he is really saying, "Hey, I'm going to make some generous donations. I'm going to make some restitution." He doesn't mean half. It doesn't mean four times. You're like, "Well, that sounds really dishonest." Let me give you an example. Most of you know I spoke Arabic. I was a linguist in the military, traveled in the Middle East. If Gina walked in and said, "Jen, I really like your shirt. It's so pretty." My appropriate response culturally is to say tafadali, which means please take my shirt. First of all, it would be scandalous if I took my shirt off and handed it to her, and highly inappropriate. But I don't actually mean take my shirt, but the appropriate response, because I'm really flattered by her compliment, and I believe it's sincere, is to say, please take my shirt. When you do something nice for me, I don't just say thank you for everything that the volunteers poured out yesterday and all throughout the week. My response isn't just thank you, shukran, it's mia shukran, mia shukr, which means 100 thank yous. It's culturally appropriate to exaggerate what's being said because it demonstrates the sincerity of what's actually in your heart. So hear me, while he is not suddenly broken, the math doesn't even work because he got rich from taking money from people. So if you get hung up in that, you're like, "Well, how could he give back four times what he took? Am I the only one?" No. Okay, that's fine. But he goes on, he's being incredibly sincere. And what we see is transformation. But the grace in it that I love, that I want you to catch, is when you come to God with that kind of sincerity in your heart, Jesus doesn't wait to see him do it. Jesus doesn't circle back in a week and say, "Did you really do what you said you were going to do? Because now I'm going to say you belong." He comes with his little transformed heart and says, I'm so sorry, and I'm going to make this right, and I'm going to be changed. I'm going to do good things now instead of bad things. That's what he's really saying. Jesus responds, today. Today, salvation has come to this house. Today. Not after you do what you said you're going to do, but because you brought me your heart that's transformed. Today, salvation has come to you. God doesn't need to see the fruit of your promises before he accepts you. God doesn't need to see it all play out before you really belong. It's not like, okay, we say yes to Jesus and we have our fire insurance, we're not going to hell, but we stay on the outskirts of the family till we actually start to change. Jesus says, today, not only today has salvation come, but he says, this man too is a son of Abraham. And I want you to understand that Jesus stood up in that crowd full of haters who were there for the steak and the show. And he said, Zacchaeus, today I have saved you. And everyone in this room, he is no longer the enemy. He is your brother. He too is a son of Abraham. He is family. He does not belong up in a tree. He belongs in the family tree. Y'all get that? Like, that's a big deal. You don't need to get it all right to belong. You just have to take your heart and go, here it is, God. And you belong. There's a charge to the community in that. Because not only does Jesus say, you belong, he looks at the community and in saying, he's your brother, he says, you welcome him. Because to be a brother or a sister comes with rights and privileges that everyone has to that person. And one of the things that I love about Bridge that Pastor Rick and I feel so blessed by is we continually hear from people who come in the door. Everybody's so welcoming. We walk beside families in crisis and people in crisis, and whether it's crisis that has happened to them or crisis of their own making, they are so grateful and repeat constantly how much this church body loves on them instead of judging them, and how we walk beside one another, and there is belonging in that. But don't miss or don't forget why we do that. It's not because we're compassionate people. I mean, we are compassionate people. I know y'all are compassionate people. But it's because Jesus has charged us that anybody who says yes to Jesus is a brother or a sister, and they are family and they belong. And so if you have been sitting back in the tree, even if you're physically on the front row, but you have held your heart and your emotions and your life back here behind all the leaves so nobody could see, let me tell you, you are welcome and you belong. And then Jesus goes just one step further as he's getting ready to head into Jerusalem. He's no longer saying, shh, don't tell. I can't tell why I'm here. He's on full court press with the religious leaders. He knows what's going to happen, and he is ready. And he gives this mission statement in verse 10. He says, for the Son of Man has come to seek and save the lost. He came to seek and save the lost. Jesus came to bring real hope to the hopeless. He came to save, to see and to save those who were sitting on the outskirts looking for more, who couldn't find it. He came to seek those who are despicable and outcast. Thank you, Jesus, because that was me. He came to seek those who were hiding behind a facade of everything being pretty and perfect. And he came to take the weight of the shame that we bear and say, nope, I got it. You are a son or daughter of the Most High King. You are a child of Abraham. You are my brother or sister, and you belong. And he did all of that not to condemn or to judge, but to take the weight of our judgment upon himself so that we could be restored to life. And not just life eternal, but abundant life right here and right now. That's the beauty of the story of Zacchaeus. And I think we need to rewrite the song to make it. It can still be cute, children's ministry, bridge kids, leaders, help us. Because it's so much more than a wee little man. As a matter of fact, well, I tell you what, why don't you read this bottom line with me? Jesus sees us in our lostness to offer salvation, transformation, and belonging. Jesus sees us and seeks us in our lostness to offer salvation, transformation, and belonging. So I'll go back to the first question I had for you guys, which is, where are you today? And I'll tell you that whether you are a saint in the front row hanging out with the disciples in this story, or you're the crowds sitting back judging Jesus a little bit, judging God's people a little bit, or whether you are the crook in the tree wanting to see and encounter Jesus but not wanting to be seen, wanting to do it from a safe distance, I want to tell you that Jesus sees you. And he doesn't hate what he sees. He loves what he sees. And Jesus knows you, and he knows every detail that you don't want anybody to know and all the stuff you want everybody to know. And he loves you, and he couldn't love you any more than he already does. And in the seeing and in the knowing and in the loving you, Jesus invites you to a transformed life in him. Because he doesn't want to leave all that stuff simmering in your life. Just like Zacchaeus, he wants to make you whole and have you changed because of it. So, church, what will you do with your 7 seconds? Today, what will you do with your 7 seconds? Will you stand up? As Ryan comes to pray, before he prays, I just want to offer an invitation. So if all heads could be bowed and all eyes could be closed. If today you would say, Jesus, I've been in the crowd, and I haven't yet committed to being a disciple, and I haven't really been sure about all of this. And maybe I got my fire insurance, but I'm not all in. And I hear what you actually have to offer, and I would say, yes, I want to be all in. Would you just raise up your hand? If today you would say, I have been in the tree, and Jesus, I hear you calling me to come down, to say yes to you for the first time in my life, to say yes to salvation and to family and to community. Whether you are joining us online and you can raise your little online hand and let our host know that, or with all eyes closed in this room, if you would say, yes, Pastor Jen, that's me. I say yes to Jesus today. Would you raise your hand?